Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Are you afraid of the dark? You're listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
Salve, I am Claudio Simonetti, the Goblin keyboard player, and you are listening to Sci-Fi and Screen on Joy 94.9.
You'll have to tell me how to say it properly.
How do you think it's said? I think it's I'm interested.
All right, well, I'll try, okay. Sororal? Sororal? Yeah. Is that all right? Is that right?
Yeah, sororal, yeah.
Sororal. Sororal. Try not to too much, rolling my R's. I'll just blame what's left of my New Zealand accent on it.
No, it is it. Look, it's my fault. It's a weird word.
All right, so this is Sonia, and it's Sci-Fi and Scream, another special podcast, especially for something monstrous, monstrous month of November, Monsterfest 2013, here in Melbourne, where a whole bunch of horror, thriller, genre movies, basically, are going to be playing exclusively at the Nova, and some of them are world premieres, and I believe Sororal, and we have the director Sam Barrett. Welcome to Sci-Fi and Scream, Sam.
Thanks for having me, Sonia.
Great. So Sam Barrett, first of all, the name, as you can see, I had trouble with that.
That's please. Perfectly fine. That's very common.
Please tell us about your film.
Well, Sororal is a neo-giallo thriller about a girl called Cassie who is tormented by visions of murder and mayhem, rather grisly murders in her dreams. Ooh. And then she commits these dreams in her waking life to canvas in the forms of rather awful but beautiful-looking paintings, very garish. Then she's approached by a detective who informs her that, in fact, her dreams and her paintings are real victims and real murders. And then she has to embark on a kind of a wild ride to find the killer, but that obviously leads her into some very strange places within herself and her family, and things get progressively strange from there on.
Look, just from the images that I've seen online, it is does hark to Italian giallo. Obviously, that's been an influence, is that right?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, look, our team, we're all cinephiles, and so there are a range of different references, but the lead jumping off points for us was to borrow elements from the giallo style, and obviously that genre is very amorphous. It's not as clear cut as something like film noir or you know, it encompasses so many different films and so many different genres actually. But what links the best types of giallo film, a kind of a playful and beautiful visual style and a kind of wonderful music by some of the greatest composers like Ennio Morricone and like that, and so, and obviously there are story conventions that go out through it, and but it's a fascinating genre, and I just thought it would be something stylistically interesting to explore.
Well, it's got that, sounds like it's got that classical aspect to it. I mean, the Melbourne International Film Festival had a special section of giallo films. Did you see any of those?
I missed that particular screening, but in the last couple of years, there has been a bit of a renaissance of this type of genre.
Yeah.
With Belgian film Amer, which is probably the most popular neo-giallo, but also slightly more mainstream is Barbarian Sound Studio, which is by Toby Jones, and a lot of different festivals around the world have been having in the last 2 years these kind of retrospectives of giallo films, and which is fantastic, you know. And I think our film's kind of riding that wave a little bit.
Gone are the days, you know, back in the 90s when you'd find them tucked away in an op shop on a VHS, a worn out VHS. That's how I found Suspiria.
Oh, really? Yeah.
When I was a kid, and I was like intrigued by the, I think it was water damaged cover, but it still had the goblin on the front and the, you know, with the soundtrack included as a separate videotape. It was very odd, but that's what you used to get in VHS days.
I'd never seen anything like that film. It was incredible.
That was amazing. Yeah. You know, and there's always the rumors and the hints that it's going to be rebooted, remade. And I'm thinking, why touch something so fantastic as it is?
Yeah, look, I think it's self-evident that the magic will be lost if you try and recreate it. I think it's a confluence of a very specific set of events. And Argento himself, look just a couple of years later with Inferno, so wildly different. And it's, although it's got some great stuff in it, I don't think it quite captures that magic. And so I think a remake would probably be the same.
Ooh. For your film, So Rural, is this the first time you've had a feature?
This is my third feature.
It's your third feature?
Yeah. Right. The first two were very small films. So, you know, it's not like I've done two. The first film was No Through Road, which is an urban sort of Straw Dogs type thriller. And then the second one's a noir film called Esoterica. They are available on DVD. So, you know, people can hunt them down if they're interested.
Why did you want to make something in this sort of vein? What was the real inspiration?
I suppose it's just the smashing together of several different things. Superficially, there was obviously a stylistic interest in giallo film, but that's not enough to make a film in and of itself, because, you know, style of a substance is never something to kind of look up to. But going from there, it was me and my co-writer really just coming up with type of film, I suppose, that we want to tell. And this movie, when you boil down all the elements, it kind of essentially is a girl with I'm doing air quotes, by the way, a girl with powers movie, which that encompasses a very specific set of films like The Fury, Carrie, Eyes of Laura Mars, and, you know, there's a whole range of films.
Phenomenon, I mean, you know, an Argento film.
Absolutely.
I love that film, actually.
It's got some great stuff, I think it was a direct influence in many ways, because what that film has and what we were trying to cultivate as well is to have everything but the kitchen sink. And that movie, because that movie's got a lot of imagination, like, you know, with the monkey and the insects, and it even steals the Don't Look Now sort of ending with the kind of dwarf killer, and it's got a range of different things that excite your mind. We kind of like that idea of trying to put a lot of different things, and that's why we encompass actually a few different genres in our movie. Like, we do, obviously, we're selling the giallo angle, which you do get certainly in the first half, but we do actually go into a bit of 70s sci-fi and so a range
so,
of
but
other
wait
things.
There's more type of thing dot
that's,
dot dot
that's you know. Right yeah, yeah. We do go into some other areas which encompass a lot of films again that we love, like old States and the Fly, right, and things like that, and
right,
and
yeah.
I suppose it's just when you
strong sort of Cronenberg elements there.
That's right, yeah. Well, I think the two non-giallo influences for us are definitely Cronenberg and mainly De Palma.
Have you seen his son's work?
Actually, no, I haven't, but I've been hearing amazing things about, what's his film, Antiviral?
Antiviral,
yeah,
incredible, so uncomfortable.
Wow.
Squirmy. Seat squirming. That's good. That's good.
It's fascinating that he's taken over the family business of a body horror.
Really interesting. Yeah, body horror would be probably the other area that seems to have been getting a real kick-starting revivalist look. Although it's quite new, I suppose, too, in some respects, with American Mary and more recently Antiviral. It seems to be growing.
A popular resurgence. Yeah. Well, I think that if there's something about the horror within which it seems to captivate people, you know, endlessly.
Viruses.
Yeah. I always think of Cabin Fever, the Eli Roth film, you know, that's kind of a kicking off point for there.
So what are some of the highlights during making of the film?
I don't know if I've got a really good soundbite for the making of the film, because it was intense, professional, and you know, I mean, we really just tried to approach it in a all or nothing sense and give everything. Our motto was really have no regrets, you know, and you know, pay for what you do, how you behave, and how you conduct yourself on set in the editing room. And having done my previous features, you learn that independent filmmaking, you don't have the resources to muck around. You don't have the resources to kind of have a good old time of it on set. It really is much more of a military experience, and that's exactly how we approached it. It was endless stamina, and you know, it was all night shoots. It was 6 weeks of night shoots, which is sends you into a, and it affects the film interestingly actually, because it sends you into a very strange psychological state when you're working at night for that for that amount of time. But it was great. We got I was really pleased with what we got, and I have no, there was no point where I can look back and say, oh geez, I wish I got another take, because we pushed ourselves hard enough to do that, to be able to do that.
Looking at the cast, how hard was it to find the girl?
You know, since
I'm doing air quotes now too.
But since it is a girl with powers movie, I mean, it's more than that, because you know, without ruining some of the major plot twists, Amanda is in almost every frame of this movie. That's quite an achievement. It's really an awesome showcase for her ability. You know, I auditioned a range of different girls for the part, and they're wonderful, and I hope to work with them in the future. But when Amanda walked in, audition was incredible. You know, just kind of, it really kind of blew us away. It's hard to describe, but she brings with her, she's a very strong and assertive actress, but she brings with herself on screen this kind of vulnerability that was just so important to Cassie, because I've talked about it before. You know, we viewers, for some reason, I learned this on my other two films, that we're very hard on female performers on screen. It's so difficult. There are things that we forgive in a male performer that we just don't forgive. And I don't know why that is. It's a double standard. It's just like, and it's men and women as viewers are really harsh on females. And even in horror films, they're only allowed to behave in a certain way. They're only allowed to get a certain type of hysterical before we check out.
All the cliches and tropes, that's right. I guess.
Which is what exactly, and actually going into that, we didn't want, it's not a slasher film, all due respect to slasher films, and if we were making one, we'd go down that route, but we wanted to make, you know, hopefully an emotionally rewarding film, and the only way to do that is to get a serious actress. Often, and the best actresses you'll find don't know or care about genre films, which is exactly what you need. You need someone who's going to approach it like Shakespeare.
Well, that brings me, I mean, immediately popped into my head, it's pretty mainstream now, but Jessica Lange in American Horror Story. Her background is theatre, pretty much Shakespearean, stuff like that.
That's right, it's a whole different approach.
She's never done that type of thing before.
That's right, it's treating the material with the seriousness that really informed our approach to everything, and it's about getting a serious actress. It's about, you know, approaching it and trying to make a great film for genre fans who are disappointed when they walk out of a horror film feeling dissatisfied or annoyed that the filmmakers didn't, you know, monitor the performances or try and plug simple logic holes in the script. When you just walk out of a film and you go, oh man,
come on
guys, like, so we really just did try and say no, let's think of you know, trying to give people a complete experience. Whether we've done that or not is another story altogether. You'd have to
We'll find out. And, of course, where can we find out and when? Sunday the 24th of November, 8:30 p.m. screening. That's a good screening time.
That's right. We're the final film in the Terra Australis showcase.
Yes.
So final film on that Sunday.
And there's some great other Aussie ones that are looking really, you know, it's looking positive for Australian horror and Australian genre, I should say, films. And your one, Sororal, will be playing... Then it's the world premiere, another one. I think there's a few world premieres for this festival this weekend coming up. And you're going to be there doing a Q&A along with your producer, I believe, and some of the cast.
That's right. There's quite a slew of them coming over. So I'm sure they'll be very excited to answer.
Will Amanda be there? Now, this is Amanda Woodhams we've been talking about or raving about.
That's right. Yes, she definitely will be there.
Cool. Excellent. What are your hopes? What are your dreams for this film?
Well,
this?
I suppose it's difficult to say because this is this being the beginning, I've got very simple ambitions. I just want it to find its audience, you know, and find fans of and it's such a simple thing to say. I mean, you know, we've made it for people who love a certain type of movie, and it's really just tapping into that community and those people who love this strange little film that we've made coming out and getting on board with it, you know, and hopefully that happens all around the world. We're going to launch it obviously overseas early next year, and then it can hit the festival circuit. Yeah, I'd just be happy to hear. I'm always just been in gestation for so long. I'm just buzzed to hear people's reactions, good or bad, you know.
Mm. How long have you? Has it been in gestation then?
Finished shooting, it was 3 years. And we started editing the night of Wrap. So we finished shooting, me and my DOB, we finished shooting. I just got in a car and we drove straight to the editing suite and started editing that night. And then obviously finished the picture lock in less than a year. And then we embarked on sound and music and VFX. And actually music is and sound are a big element of this movie. There.
Well, yeah, I mean, you mentioned earlier the Barbarian Sound Studio, which... is about the sound. Okay, can you tell us about the soundtrack? Obviously that's something that's very inclusive and very important to this film.
That's right. Well, look, as you know from Suspiria and, you know, all the Goblin work and Morricone and stuff in these Giallo films, music and sound and later on sound design, they're such an important part of this type of film. But going on from that, we wanted to create Sororal as an experience, you know. We really just wanted it to be something that envelops you and takes you to a kind of an other world, you know, and it's not it's not a world that plays by our rules. And so the work of our composer Christopher De Groot and our sound designer Ben Morris is pretty spectacular stuff. It's this seamless transition of analog synth, choir, you know, with real instrumentation like brass and obviously rhythm, and then there's the sound design work, which is, you know, all kind of hissing and whispering and murmuring and rumbles and strange, just like very. And so I'm really excited to hear the experience at the Cinema Nova on there, because we've got a true 5.1 sound mix, so it actually will surround you. And we
sounds amazing.
We've even broken up the music in certain parts into to utilize the rear channels, which is not something that people.
Yeah, wow,
the music
that's exciting. That's really great. So you've got a musical background yourself?
I don't, and I'm delighted to hear you sort of think that I do, but I don't. I know nothing about music. Yeah. Obviously, I'm just a music fan. And the way I collaborate with Chris, he's an incredible musician, and urge any other filmmakers who are there to hassle him and give him cards, business cards and things like that. But the way I'd collaborate with him is very simple. We just talk in terms of emotion and story, and you know, it's not helpful for me to weigh in on notes and chords and things like that. I mean, yeah. I would just say to him, look, you know, this is how we need to feel, you know, and then we'd go back and forth on that. You know, do you go with the emotion of the scene? Do you go against it? You know, but I can say as a music fan what I feel certain instruments and things mean, you know, because and we would have those discussions.
What sort of sounds they traditionally would make.
That's right. You'd go.
What you think they could make. Sometimes you can get musicians that makes a sound from an instrument totally.
That's right. Well,
different to what you would be normally thinking.
He's big into that. He's got all sorts of strange instruments, but he also got into and learnt analog synth for this film, because you know, and I think it's fair to say that he didn't know anything about it before the film, and he's a master at it now. He got all original synth and you know, got parts from all around the world, and wow. it's electronics, you know. I mean, it's like having to be get into that sort of stuff, and you know, because Tangerine Dream was another reference that we would use, and so we'd kind of soak up all these references, you know, really immerse ourselves, and Chris would just come up with some of the most wonderful solutions to our problems. And there's almost an hour, and I mean, it must be an hour and a half worth of music in the film, so it's pretty nonstop.
That's amazing. Will that be available separately, do you think? Or
we're definitely working on a soundtrack release. Well, yep. Chris is handling that because it's his music and his deal. Yeah. So we're hoping, yeah, definitely he'd be very keen to get it out there. And actually, played a track on radio the other day, so
cool.
getting a bit of airplay.
That's great. That's great. We'll certainly have to get the links for that and play some of that on air as well.
Certainly, yeah.
If you're okay with that.
I certainly am.
Cool. Yeah. Sam, I mean, yeah, I sort of get lost in talking about stuff like this because my images going through my head what it must be like, and mixing it with sound and vision. It's just so important, I think.
Mm.
And it's great to see Australians doing this. It's just like, at last.
Yeah, well, you know, Australian genre film is a tricky beast, isn't it? Because we've got a reputation of making a certain type of film, and kind of we perhaps wanted to play against that a little bit. Then that's the two strands of film, which is the urban thriller, which we've actually done before. Obviously, the rural horror sort of thing, which is another thing altogether. But I suppose we just, our team and me, I've been cultivated with sort of different sort of interests and you know, perhaps a little bit more, I don't know, lyrical or something, or
urban.
Yeah,
urban. I don't know.
Well, I mean, like people have said, and actually, this is a strange thing people have said of the film. Is someone said to me the other day, they go, "Oh, I saw the movie. I didn't even think it was made in Australia." I don't know what to take out from that. Because we've certainly got an all. It was all shot here. It was, you know, we chose very strange locations, obviously, and I think that's probably what they're pointing at. But you know, I'm very protectful of our accent as well. That's I really am uncomfortable with American accents and things like that. You know, when you're watching like an Australian genre film, and there's just like one American guy or something, and you're like, I mean, it doesn't happen that often, but when you do, you just go, why is
it
that
used happening? To happen quite a bit. I think in the 90s there used to be a lot of late 90s.
I think it's,
early
it's
noughts,
the same
there
thing.
There was a lot of America. They would bring over an American actor, and you just go, why?
Yeah, well, exactly. And I think it's the old adage of if there's an American in it, then Americans will like it. It's like the same reason you put Jake Lloyd in Phantom Menace, right?
Uncomfortable with it. Yeah, not a healthy ego.
You
need to have a healthy ego, I think, to make these sort of genre films. Look, Sam, fantastic. It's exciting to see a film of this caliber type coming through finally and happening in Melbourne, I think, which is really good, because I think definitely filmmakers can weigh in on their own now. And what are you, speaking of the actual fest, are there any films apart from your own you want to check out?
Oh, look, there's I was talking to Michael Helms the other day, and he was giving me the lowdown of a range of, I think there's a World Cinema Day, which has got a bunch of ones from all around the world that I'll probably be checking out. But I'm up for anything, really. And there's almost too much to choose from.
There is. It's like, wow, you know. Look, I will go and see Dario Argento's Dracula 3D. I know it's probably cheesy, but it's still,
it
still might have some good bits in it, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, it's got a goblin score as well.
Yeah, excellent. Did you go to see them when they were here? Certainly did.
Incredible. Like, and actually, I'm so dazzled. I don't know which was better, the show or the score to Suspiria at
That's
Acme.
That's right, Acme.
And they were both pretty amazing. You know, like I was just blown away. I didn't think we'd get to see them. I'd be like, oh well, they're over
and
there.
And then they came back.
That's right.
Did you go to see them again? I went to see them this time, and it was pretty amazing.
Yeah, amazing stuff. Like, you know, and it was just staggering to be able to see them. Me and Chris, the composer, went along, and it was spectacular.
They're loving it too. Like, we interviewed Claudio and Simonetti, and they're just loving this attention, because, you know, they just didn't realise that there were so many non-English speaking fans. I mean, in Italy itself, of course, they're like something you have on your coffee table, we'll talk about at breakfast. That's the, you know, level of Argento's respect there. But outside of Italy, I don't think they were aware, especially in Australia, that it was so, their work was so admired and popular.
Which is staggering. That one soundtrack in particular for Suspiria is so seminal. Like, it's, you know, it's amazing. Yeah. To think that they wouldn't have had much pushback from that, you know. But that's, incredible.
Yeah, still incredible. Watching it again with that soundtrack was, amazing. To have them actually right there doing it. You just look at it and go, I don't really understand what's going on, but it's a beautiful film.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
it's
yeah.
A beautiful film. Yeah. Yeah. Look, Sam, thank you. And I'm sure that people will enjoy, of course, your film coming out very soon this weekend. It's going to be at Monsterfest Film Festival. It is the horror film festival in Australia. I don't know if there's anything quite like it yet anywhere else. I know that there's sort of like mini conventions and mini screenings here and there in some of the cities around Australia, but nothing to this sort of equivalent.
Yeah, it's certainly the premier horror festival in the country today, really. It's taken that crown. Happily.
It's good on them, Neil and all the guys. It's brilliant. So, yes, head along on the Sunday, the 24th of November, 8:30 p.m. at Nova for the world premiere, including a Q&A with the director, Sam Barrett, and all the gang for something called So Rural. I think I finally got that right.
That's right. That was correct.
Look, thanks, Sam, for talking to us on Sci-Fi and Squeam.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Cheers.
Hi, I'm Maurizio Guarini, keyboard player of Goblin. You are listening to Sci-Fi Scream at 94.9.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.